Hi, I'm Connor, and this is Learn English with Everest, a podcast where I chat to native English speakers in real, unscripted English, and then step by step explore the language used. This episode is the fourth and final part in our mini-series about English for work and business. We've looked at CVs, job interviews, and phone English. And finally, today, we're going to look at talking to customers, colleagues, and clients. We're going to look at the grammar and vocabulary of formal and informal English. So I talked to Trina, an English language teacher here in Everest, and we had a chat about formality in English and about customer service. So let's have a listen to our chat. Along the way, I'll explain the vocabulary and expressions we use. And don't forget that all the vocabulary and grammar and other material is at everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. everestlanguageschool.com/podcast.
Hi, Trina. Thanks for coming on the show. So we're going to have a chat today about formal and informal English and about customer service and things like that as well. So I don't know about you, how often you speak or write in very formal English, but it tends to be, for most people, strangers, business contacts, clients, customers, things like that.
To be honest, the last time I wrote a formal email was when I applied to Everest Language School as an English language teacher.
Oh, well, there you go. So, yeah, and that's the other thing, because a lot of the time it's writing, you know, like formal English is formal writing. We don't tend to speak that often in formal English, even in a business situation. You know, if you're talking to colleagues or people you know, it's kind of weird to be very formal.
That's true.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about this sort of idea of formal and informal English, where, you know, you can say that there's two things, formal and informal, but maybe in reality there's more of a sort of a scale. So at one end you have slang, so this is the sort of English that you only use with your friends and stuff, things you wouldn't say to your grandmother or something like that. And that would also include like swear words and various things like that. Then you have just informal language. You have kind of neutral language, maybe, which is neither formal nor informal. It's just pretty neutral. You have formal language that we use for certain situations. And then maybe there's also just like very formal English, sometimes to the point of being very antiquated or old-fashioned, or sometimes it's maybe very literary or something like that. So trying to think of an example, it might be something like the saying hello to somebody. So a slang version might be, you know, what's the crack, which we often say in Ireland, or what's the story, or what's up, or something like that. Something more informal might be just hi or hey. Something completely neutral would be hello. You know, you might say hello to your friends, you might say hello to a stranger. More formal, something like good afternoon or something like that. And then something really old-fashioned like good day. I don't know, does anybody ever say good day? Or
at least I don't.
No, I mean, I don't know, maybe somebody. But it's so formal that we just don't even really use it. So there's probably not really a clear division between these. I mean, when you might use one or another is not fixed or anything like that.
Yes, I think what's the crack is an interesting one, and it's very much related to the place. So in Ireland we say what's the crack, any crack, but of course I don't say that to my mom.
Okay, yeah exactly.
Then another thing that's quite interesting is when students ask, when do I say good morning, good afternoon, and good evening? You know, what time of the day do I say those at? And especially between good afternoon and good evening, and they kind of merge together in some ways around 5, 6,
yeah,
6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Do we say good afternoon or good evening? But maybe you're thinking of it too formally. You know, we would say good afternoon and good evening around that time, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock is getting into a good evening.
Yeah, and to be honest, we don't really use good afternoon, good evening that often. It is quite formal.
Yes.
I don't know if I would ever really say that to, you know, a friend or, you know, good evening. It's, yeah.
Yes, and I think it comes from the Romance languages as well. They tend to use it more. But yes, I mean, saying hi and hey and hello, I would.
Yeah.
They kind of cross over between, yeah, informal and neutral.
Yeah, and maybe good morning and good night are kind of much more everyday expressions, kind of informal, neutral. Like most people would say good morning if you walk into an office first thing, hey, good morning, whatever. And good night as well when you're going to bed, as opposed to good night at like 6 o'clock in the evening or something like that.
Yes, but every day you have that conversation. Good morning, how are you? Fine, and you?
Yeah, exactly.
So this is a scale we'll come back to in this week's episode. From very informal or slang, to informal, to neutral or everyday language, to formal and very formal. So we're going to have a look now at the three main ways you can make your language formal.
If you're going to make something formal or informal or anything else, there are different ways that you can do it. What sometimes confuses students is if they come from a background where there's a really straightforward way of making things formal. So you change the word for you, or you change the form of the verb, or like English is kind of weird that it doesn't have that. I think, I don't know, most languages I know have some form of like formal you that we just don't have in English. I don't know. Do you know any other languages that don't have that? Or
I always remember this one time when I went on my exchange, my Erasmus to France, and I was with a bunch of students and the professor, and I said, there's tu and vous. Vous is more formal, and we don't have that in English, like you said. And all of the French students were shocked that I would use two in front of a professor, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, I think it's maybe special in English that we use you for everything. Maybe there are some languages that use, I'm actually not so sure.
Most of the languages I have even a passing familiarity with have some version of you. I mean, English used to have that, like, you, and then it had like thou and stuff, but they're really, really old kind of things we don't have anymore. But yeah, so I mean, if you're kind of used to that, it can be difficult, in the same way as, yeah, Irish people learning French are like, oh god, do I need to use vous or tu, or, you know, usted, or whatever you might be doing. So we have other ways in English, obviously, to be formal or to be informal, and they're to do with vocabulary, obviously, lots of different vocabulary, grammar as well, and then especially the tone of your voice, how you say something. So we're going to kind of talk a little bit about those three, about vocabulary, about grammar, and about the tone of your voice. So the first one is vocabulary. So there are lots of ways or lots of areas where vocabulary might be formal or informal. One of the things is that for those students who speak Romance languages, Latin languages like Spanish and Italian and French and so on, the words that sound a bit like their language, the words that are kind of Latin-y, are usually formal in English, and the words that aren't, or if there's an alternative, then it's usually the informal one. So, you know, the difference between proceed and go, or something is convenient and something is handy. So there are words that sound very like proceed or convenient in French and in Italian and in Spanish and so on, and sort of things like that. So have you found students have had trouble with this or difficulties with this? Or
actually today in class this came up with the word comprehensive and understanding.
Okay, yeah.
Content and happy. I think we all know happy is a word that we use quite a lot.
Yeah.
But we can say content, but we don't use it as much as you would do in French or Portuguese, Italian, Spanish.
Yeah,
those Latin
yeah.
languages.
Yeah.
But it is one of those translations, you know. It is one of those translations.
Yeah, so it's I think you've got two things. One is where maybe we have two words and one sounds like, you know, Spanish or whatever, but it's not really the same or has a slightly different meaning. And then the other is when it more or less is the same, but it's just much more formal, or it sounds very, very out of place or something like that. So
yes.
If you ask, oh, what time does this class commence? Just sounds very weird, because commence is really formal in English, even if there's a very similar word to commence in other languages. But
yes.
When does it start? You know, is really normal.
It's like, please proceed to gate 12 in the airport.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Instead of saying, go to gate 12.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's formal, and the, you know, the people at the airport want to be very polite, even though we never use the word proceed just day to day. But it can be problematic as well, because sometimes, you know, if you're speaking to a, you know, Italian student or something, they can often sound sort of weirdly formal, like inappropriately formal, because they're just translating words, and you have that idea where you're like, well, I understand what you say, but you just sound so formal. It's really strange, or something like that, which you maybe don't have with a Korean student or something like that. So that's one area. Another is that phrasal verbs, I think it's fair to say, are nearly always informal. Would that sound fair?
I think we use them quite a lot. Native speakers are big users of native English speakers yeah. are big users of phrasal verbs, so we use them in a lot of informal situations.
Yeah, like day-to-day chatting is full of phrasal verbs because it's kind of neutral or informal, and when we move into more formal situations, we tend to drop them, especially in writing as well. You don't see maybe that many phrasal verbs in written formal English and business letters and reports and stuff like that. So what would be a few examples of phrasal verbs maybe that would have an equivalent other word?
Imagine I want to check something on Wikipedia. So I say, I'm going to look up a certain topic on Wikipedia.
Mm.
But yeah, we would say, I'm going to look that up instead of I'm going to search or investigate.
Yeah, yeah. So yes, let me investigate that on Wikipedia. It sounds very strange, yeah. Or let me research that or something.
Yes, yeah, it sounds so like a crime scene. I'm going to investigate.
Yeah, that. Yeah. So look it up or something. Or maybe you want to renovate your house, but renovate is very formal, so you might say do up or something like that. So these are phrasal verbs then. There are some phrasal verbs that are formal, but the vast majority of them are informal.
So there we have lots of examples of formal vocabulary. Proceed instead of go, convenient instead of handy, commence instead of start. And we just talked about a few phrasal verbs there, but there are obviously lots and lots of phrasal verbs. Everybody loves phrasal verbs. And they are nearly always more informal than the alternative one-word verb. Next, we talk a little bit about slang. So I think the most important thing is to not get too caught up, not too worried about slang. There is far too much slang for anybody to ever learn. You know, there's so much slang all over the world in different places. So it's something that learners can get a little bit preoccupied with, but really you shouldn't worry too much.
Another area to be aware of is that formal vocabulary tends to be quite similar across all of the different regional variations of English. English in Ireland, in England, in Scotland, in Australia, in America, and etc. But slang changes like so much. So even, you know, from town to town and city to city, your slang, I imagine, is not, or maybe was not the same as a child as my slang or whatever, even though we grew up, what, I don't know, 200 kilometers apart or something. Where are you from?
I'm from Longford.
Longford, okay. So, like, that's not very far from Dublin, where I'm from, but
no.
Presumably there were different words that we used.
Actually, my mom uses different slang to me. She used the word fellow for that fellow down the road.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That guy, I would say that guy down the road.
Yeah, so generational as well, yeah. So different generations use different slang, different countries, different cities, different stuff like that. And you often have, for really, really common words, like so fellow for man, there's so many different words. Like we might use like lad, the lad over there, or like guy, maybe more commonly. We don't really use bloke very much in Ireland, but in England and Australia as well, it's really, really common.
And in the north of England, they say geezer as well.
Or geezer, yeah, yeah.
I love that one. It's just so different.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have like dude and stuff like that. You know, so you have all these different words for, you know, man. And all those kind of basic words have all these different variations. So slang is really hard to keep up with, even as a native speaker. I think it's easy to get kind of caught up in or worried about not knowing slang if you're learning English. But I mean, how important do you think it really is for a learner of English?
I think it's nice to be up to date, but I have some Brazilian friends, for example, that have lived outside of Brazil for many years. And when they go back, they realize that they have missed out on some new Brazilian slang. So it's hard for me to even keep up with these things as well. But I think it culturally and I guess to be immersed in the whole experience of being in Ireland, it's nice to keep in touch and with these words. It's nice to learn some slang and and use it.
But yeah. You don't need a lot. And especially in a business English context. If there's certain slang that people use in your office, great. But otherwise, you know.
Finally, there's the problem of addressing people in formal situations. Mr. Smith, Dr. Smith, Sir, Ma'am, and all those other variations.
Of course, there are some people that do like to be referred to as a professor or a doctor. But with regards to miss and sir and madam.
Yeah, I mean, in hospitality industry, it's used a bit, like in hotels and things like that. Good afternoon, sir, you know. So I guess if you work in an industry, if you work in like a cafe, it's like, you know, good morning, what can I get for you, blah, blah, blah. But maybe if you work at a 5-star hotel, it's, good morning, madam, you know, how may I help you? There's that level of formality that you maybe expect in certain industries or things like that. I think generally maybe Irish people are a bit more informal in business context. Like it would be, I think, quite strange to call somebody, like if their name is John O'Reilly, to call them Mr. O'Reilly maybe more than once. You might say, hello, Mr. O'Reilly. Oh, no, call me John, or whatever. It would be very odd to continue a conversation addressing each other. That's right, Mr. O'Reilly. Yes, Miss Smith. That's really interesting. I
think
know.
It feels uncomfortable.
Yeah,
at a certain point. Yes.
It seems really old-fashioned or something that you might see in a film set.
Yes. Jane Austen.
20s or Jane Austen or something. Yes. Mr. Darcy. That's ridiculous. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think, again, a level of formality at the very beginning, just call somebody Miss O'Reilly or something like that. But after that, the vast majority of Irish people will just say, call me whatever their first name is or that kind of thing.
We then have grammar. There are lots of grammatical structures that are more formal in English.
If we want to be formal in English, we often use modal verbs. So may I open a window instead of can I open a window? And we also use conditional structures or make things into questions to be more polite. So why is it in English that things are more polite if they are conditional or a question or things like that?
Take, for example, if I were you, I would stop smoking instead of using the imperative. Stop smoking.
Yeah.
Or being a bit more suggestive. You should stop smoking because it's bad for your health. Yes, it's kind of going around what you want to say.
The less direct you are, the nicer it is, the more polite it is.
Using more flowery language, not getting to the point directly.
Yeah. If it's not too much trouble at all, would you mind opening a window or something like that? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It gets lost in there between the words, but you hear the message. The message gets across.
Yeah, and it's longer and it's less direct, but it means it's more polite because you're giving the other person the option of saying no rather than just saying open a window or something like that.
Yes.
Would you mind opening a window or could you give me a hand please rather than just help me or something like that.
So it's a bit more empathy.
Yeah. So these sort of grammar structures make things polite as well and formal. And then the last one is the tone of your voice. I mean, this is obviously really important for formality. You know, you can use a formal word or a polite word like please, but there is a difference between go over there, please, and go over there, please, you know, in that sort of way. So tone of voice, definitely a big one, which can be difficult for learners of English as well to get the tone right sometimes. I don't know if you have found yourself ever inadvertently offended by somebody who wasn't trying to be offended or...
Yeah, I think our... advantages as English language teachers that we understand it. And if you've traveled to other places, sometimes you think, wow, are they shouting at each other on the street?
Yeah.
But it's actually just how the language works. You know, the intonation is used in different ways in different languages. And then maybe the students focusing so much on saying it correctly and maybe clearly that they're shouting it.
Or speaking kind of in this monotone, robotic kind of way that just doesn't sound friendly. And friendliness is polite, you know, so can
of
I help
course.
You? As you know, as opposed to can I help you? And that can be hard as well, especially if you come from a language which has a very different tonality or a different way of saying things or something like that.
So these are the three main areas: vocabulary, grammar, and tone of voice. Trian and I finished our chat by thinking about this in relation to customer service. So talking to clients and customers and other business contacts. You know, you need to be relatively formal most of the time, and you certainly need to be polite.
What would be a kind of a standard, nice, formal, polite greeting to somebody if you work in a shop or work somewhere, someone enters your business?
Hello, good morning. Maybe here you could say, you know, good morning, good afternoon. How can I help you? But another one that can confuse people is, are you all right?
Yeah,
and they think, I'm not sick. I mean, I'm okay. Do I look like I'm sad?
Yeah.
It's really just to check, do you want me to help you with your dress size? Do you want me to show you around the shop and explain more about the products that we have?
Yeah, are you all right is what I say when I see you crying in the corner of the room. But it's also what I say when I'm a shop assistant and you're browsing the, you know, dresses or something. You know, are you all right? Oh, yes, I'm looking for a different size. So, yeah, this one can be a little bit, because it's not very, very formal either. It's kind of a maybe neutral kind of expression, but can be confusing. And then I suppose if you're trying to explain things or sell things or anything like that, again, those sort of conditional structures are good. And, you know, tone of voice is important as well. So could you tell me what you're looking for exactly? Or would you like me to explain that again? Or do you need a, you know, can I help you with something else here? Or something like that. Tone of voice, I guess, is very important. If you're giving instructions, if you have a client or a customer and you're telling them what to do, you definitely don't want to be demanding or sort of using imperative structures and things. So how can you nicely tell somebody what to do?
If you could just follow me over here. Yes, I think we do use some of the hypothetical cases like that.
Yeah, I guess things like if we use a lot.
We use if a lot. Maybe with a question, would you mind waiting here for a moment? Instead of wait here for a moment.
Yeah. So would you mind, or if you wouldn't mind, or you can maybe use an imperative like wait here if you wouldn't mind, or you just kind of to soften it or something. But if you'll just sit down here, or if you'll just have a seat, or if you could just sign this document, or these kind of things. So very conditional.
It's like it's almost a problem. It's almost like it's a task or a duty or problem for the other person, you know, to do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, if you don't mind.
Is it okay
if you do that?
Yeah. And that's kind of similar to the next one, which is kind of saying no. You generally, you don't want to be using very negative language, especially when you're trying to sell somebody something or, you know, you're giving them a service or something like that. So rather than saying no, what might you say to a client or customer or something like that?
Could say I'm afraid that.
Yeah.
Which is confusing because you learn, okay, I'm afraid, I'm frightened, I'm scared, but it's another way of saying, you know, I'm very sorry, but I'm afraid that. Unfortunately.
Yeah, so kind of I'm so sad, you know. Unfortunately, we don't have any more shoes in that size, or I'm afraid we don't have I'm afraid we won't be able to deliver that report next week, but we can get it to you afterwards or something like that. So rather than just being like no, something a little bit nicer.
So there are lots of ways of using more formal, more polite language with customers and clients. So, you know, you're not being demanding or being very negative. Instead, you're sympathetic and understanding and friendly. And, you know, this is particularly good if you're trying to sell somebody something. So finally then, you'll need to end a meeting or leave a client and you need to say something. So Trian and I gave a few suggestions here.
Thanking somebody, thanks again, lovely to meet you, very nice meeting you, something like that. So we normally say nice to meet you at the beginning, and then it was nice to meet you, or it was nice meeting you, or it was lovely meeting you, or some variation on that when we're leaving, having met somebody for the first time. And what other types of things maybe might you say when people are leaving?
Even though you mightn't be thanking the person for a lot of things, they just maybe advised you about something in a shop, you could say thanks again for everything. You know, to a customer, or also as the customer saying it to the sales assistant, you could say thanks again for everything. Thanks a million. We say that quite a lot.
There's a lot of thanks variation. And then things like all the best and
take care.
Yeah, and more informal ones, see you later, see you, talk to you soon, those sort of ones. But I think for more business situations, all the best and take care, and or maybe things like when you're following something up, you know, I'll be in touch about that, or you know, I'll email you about that soon, or you know, these kind of things. So so these are all different ways we might use our formal and informal English for customer service, sales, client sort of situations. So thank you very much, Trina, for being on the show.
Thank you, Connor. It was a pleasure.
So there you have it. Don't forget, all the vocabulary, expressions and grammar are on the website, everestlanguageschool.com/podcast. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening. That's the end of this Business English mini-series. Next up, we'll be looking at exam English, more specifically at the Cambridge exam. Special thanks to my guest this week, Trina, and thanks also to Nouveau Noise, who provided the theme music for the show. And if you like the show, as always, tell all your friends. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. And that's it. Thanks so much, and see you next time for episode 9.